between fun theory and general relativity when we put them together, makes sense. And then I was going to discuss models of modified gravity in dimension 6 or higher, because they look like mass of gravities, and then ending with a 5-dimensional model. But I think from the questions and discussions here, now I'll flip around, so I'll first discuss 5-dimensional model, because that addresses the basics of the formalism, and then I'll go to high-dimensional model, similar to what Justin did. So, in particle physics, everything that contributes to vacuum energy acts like a cosmological constant, because once we have TV nu, from Lorentzian law, it has to be proportional to epsilon, which is dimension 4, epsilon stands for vacuum energy density. And if that vacuum energy density gravitates in a conventional way, like it does in general relativity, then there is no escape. This is too huge. And the reason why it's too huge is that there are multiple reasons why it's huge. First of all, let me start with classical contributions, or classical fields. So typically in field theories, we have potentials like this. Clearly, without gravity, that has the absolute minimum of this potential has no meaning. You can shift it up and down. But as Stefan was emphasizing, once you switch on gravity, that's not true anymore. And in particular, we have these type of potentials coming from very different scales in particle physics. In particular, in QCD, for instance, you can think of the effective potential of some kind of colorless operator, which has form like that, and that gives rise to the QCD condensates, which determine a pattern physics. In electrolytic physics, you have a Higgs condensate of the order of 10 to the 3 GeV, roughly about 246 GeV in fact. And then we expect that there is a grand unified theory, maybe, which would have condensates of the corresponding scalar fields at the scale of 10 to the 16 GeV. So magically somehow, in order for us to get the small value, magically somehow these very different scales with very different physics should conspire to give us small number. But that's not all, of course. I was talking about here about the zero momentum states. So these condensates are zero momentum states, in fact. But there are also non-zero momentum states, which are just quantum mechanical fluctuations of, or zero-point fluctuations of any particle that we know of. And actually, that's how the cosmological constant problem got started, when Zeldovich in roughly 67 just calculated the positive energy contribution to, or vacuum energy contribution to, the quantum zero-point energy contribution to the vacuum energy. So he did an extremely simple thing. He just summed up all the oscillators until the scale which for him was 1 GeV, because back then he was thinking about protons and neutrons, and the way he was thinking is that's their highest UV physics you could have. So I guess that was before Slack experiment. So of course he got a huge number, but inconsistent with everything, and also that is how he quit particle physics and went to astrophysics and cosmology. And then he was going around saying that you should solve this problem, otherwise particle physics doesn't make sense. Now, the point that Stefan made was that there is a UV contribution to this vacuum energy, which is divergent, typically which is divergent. However, there is a nice framework in which you can regularize that, and that's called supersymmetry. Of course, supersymmetry does the job that it cuts off vacuum energy, and by definition, if we live in a supersymmetric world, globally supersymmetric world, vacuum energy would have been zero. But because the world is not supersymmetric and it would be broken at high scale, so then there will be finite contribution to the vacuum energy. Okay, so now this is not divergent anymore. In other words, it's at high scale, you hit the Suzy particle masses, and you get a finite result. It's not divergent anymore, it's finite. And also, this serves as an example to what Stefan mentioned, which is that you've got UV physics. However, it does not cure anything for you at low energies, because it cures things at very high energies and gives you very high contribution to the vacuum energy, which would be TV to the force, very roughly. And that's pretty bad. So in the simplest setup, if you think that, or if we think that the time is only supersymmetric, for instance, a string theory would, in most of the cases, require that, then the typical vacuum energy contribution would be TV to the fourth or higher, which would give rise to the curvature like this, assuming that the Einstein theory is right for the vacuum energy, and that should be compared with the experimental number, which is approximately 10 to the minus 42 GeV, so there is a huge discrepancy, of course, between the two. And this has been known for a long time, and people produced lots of proposals to dynamically to introduce some additional fields, extracellular, for instance, and dynamically adjust their value so that they cancel effectively cosmological constant very low energies. And those attempts continued until Weinberg proved very powerful no-go theorem, which basically says that in a conventional framework, when you have four-dimensional theory, four-dimensional quantum field theory with finite number of degrees of freedom, and conventional gravity, you cannot really adjust the cosmological constant. So there's no way to do that. I won't go into those discussions, I'll just tell you this. The proof. So of course there is always a way to fine-tune, which is that we say, okay, in a classical theory, we got some value lambda zero, and we don't care, after all, we do all kinds of renormalizations, etc. So we can introduce counterparticular cosmological constant, so that the calculation is exactly cancelled by the bare cosmological constant, so that we get the value which is close to zero. But that requires tremendous fine-tuning, at least one part of 10 to the 60, and actually the purpose of this transparency is to argue that we have not done that type of fine-tuning so far in anything that we observed so far. Okay, so that goes back to argument by Wilson, who very strongly influenced development of the normalization of the quantum field theory, who identified the types of the general types of the quantities which are sensitive to the UE physics. So one of them is of course the Higgs particle mass. Higgs particle mass, we want it to be close to 200 GeV. However, as it appears in the standard model, it is sensitive to UE physics, and it is power sensitive to UE physics. That's a problem. And of course, the second one is the cosmological constant. But besides that, so let me look at the standard model, what the situation is. So standard model is an incredibly good theory for particle interactions, strong, weak, and electromagnetic interactions. And it has, here I put approximately 20, because depending whether you include neutrino masses and how many you include. If you don't include neutrino masses, you can count exactly how many particles you have, but approximately 20, doesn't matter. So among these 20 parameters, all but one are technically natural. That is that for every single parameter that you put in, there's a naturalness that's at work, which is that it doesn't get sensitive to UV physics as a power. Like for instance, so let me take any particle. You can take U quark or the electron, which is lighter. So it's 0.5 MeV, right? So there is a huge hierarchy between electron mass and the Planck mass, huge. So why don't we worry about that? So the reason why we don't worry about that is because once we set electron mass there, it's not power sensitive to the UV physics, to what's going on at the Planck scale, because there is a symmetry that protects it, and that's why we don't worry. So clearly, in the final theory, we have to explain why the electron mass is that small, by 10 to the, 0.5 MeV, but that's a separate question, okay? That's a dynamical question. For instance, you can take some Sugra MSSM and try to run down the parameters and explain the electron mass as it appears, just getting the U power, right? But that's a separate dynamical question. So what we're discussing here is the technical nature of this. So the point that I'm trying to make is that, which is well known, which is that all the standard model parameters, but one, are technically natural. Although they are smaller than the Planck scale, but they are technically natural. They don't get denormalized, power sensitivity. And the only unnatural one is the Higgs mass, and that's the one that's not discovered yet. So so LHC actually will probe this naturalness ideas in about a year or so. So we will have, so in some sense, we do have some suggestions that whatever we observe, everything is technically natural, and whatever we did, we haven't seen it yet, or we have, or there must be some new crystal which stabilizes that. And people do low energy supersymmetry which does that, or Technicolor, or some other model for the large extra dimensions were invented for that. So this is all part of the same philosophy. So same type of argument applies to the cosmological constant. So if we believe in the nature of this argument, then there must be some kind of new physics which stabilizes. Okay? So the reason why I discuss this to this extent is because of all kinds of landscape arguments that are around. So I hope I won't get any questions about the landscape. So I stick to the naturalness arguments and try to address the cosmological constant problem in that context. Okay, so now what's the proposal? So as I said, so particle physics proposals, pure particle physics proposals didn't really work because of the Weinbergs, which Weinberg's theorem explains that why they didn't work. So we decided to think about the other possibility. Basically, you can take Weinberg's theorem, the conditions that are in the theorem, and try to exclude each of them and study new physics. Okay, so that's how you could solve in principle. So the simplest one seemed that you can modify gravity at large distances. And very naive argument is this. So these arguments were already presented in some form by Stefan and Justin. But let me say it in a very simple way. So this is the Newtonian potential that we see from submicron scales to very, very large scales, let me say that. And then the massive gravity would have given you something like this. Although I haven't defined yet what the massive gravity is, but let me define that way, that you get Yukawa. So this mg is the graviton mass, so I'll think of the mg, which is of order of the Hubble today, 10 to the minus 42 GeV. So there was a question that why this is small and why there is no naturalness associated with that, and I think Justin answered it completely rigorously, which is that this is technically natural, and you put it and it doesn't get renormalized. It's very different from the cosmological constant. Okay, so then anything that has typical scales, which are bigger than Hubble scale, will be gravitating with this type of potential. And anything that has scales which are shorter will be gravitating with this type of potential. That's a very simple and naive argument. And of course, if that stuff, that big stuff, is gravitating with this type of potential, you would expect that it to be degravitated because the Yukawa just shuts off. Okay? Now, there was another question also, absolutely right one, which is that, okay, you degravitate the vacuum energy like that. Of course, you could play with this exponent and arrange exponent in such a way that the original lambda you started with degravitates to exactly the lambda that we see today, but that's too much of a fine-tuning and stuff, well, and tuning, in fact. So there is other more natural, well, there may be, sorry, other more natural way to get the cosmic acceleration, which is that if this massive graviton can also condense, so now massless particle cannot condense in general relativity because if you don't have any sources, the condensate of the graviton, which I call this, that's the bare of the Ricci scalar, is zero. However, in modified gravity, it doesn't have to be zero because you do have extra terms in the Einstein equation. And then you got scale, which is the right one for this. Now, these are all wishful thinking, okay? So the question is whether we can have concrete theories which do all this. And the bottom line of my talk, at least today, would be that there are some models in which you see the pieces of all this story, okay? So just to make a connection with Stefan's talk and Justin's talk, in some sense, you can think of that as well as the effective G Newton, and Stefan and Justin did a great job in understanding that in terms of particles, etc. So I won't go into those discussions for the sake of time. Now, okay. So let me start with so the philosophy now will be this. So if you have, so we don't know what's massive general relativity.
we don't know what's complete nonlinear theory. That's what I mean. In fact, there were lots of works to construct it in four dimensions. And the minimal approach in which you just, you know, make nonlinear completion of the Pauli-Fields gravity does not work. So Cedric contributed a lot to understanding that issue. And we with Andrei also wrote a paper. And there was a very old, nice paper by Hoover and Desert on that subject. So we just try to go beyond that paper and see if we can make it work. But it does not. So Cedric probably will talk about some extensions along those directions. But the bottom line today is that the nonlinear generalization of Pauli fields does not work because of the instabilities that you get at the nonlinear level. Although linear, at the linearized level, it's a perfectly fine field. So that's why we probe these models in more than four dimensions, hoping to gain some intuition and then maybe come up with something in four dimensions, or maybe nature is higher dimensional. And the naive argument, again, how this could work in higher dimensions is if you have a higher dimensional, sorry, if you have a brain, three-dimensional surface on which things are localized, and the space is infinite. Okay, it has infinite volume, more precisely, it has infinite volume. And it was known, it's been known for a long time, that in this kind of setup, you kind of solve cosmological constant problem in the following sense. So this brain has a tension, okay? So that tension from the point of view of four-dimensional observer is the cosmological constant, or is the vacuum energy, okay? And what happens in ordinary four-dimensional world is that vacuum energy kind of curves four-dimensional space-time. But in this setup, instead of curving four-dimensional space-time, it can curve or do something with extra space. And because that extra space is infinite, it has infinite volume, you can tolerate it. Okay, if it has finite volume, for instance, this wouldn't work in any Kaluza-Klein compactification or Randolph-Sandrum type framework. It has to be infinite. And in terms of equations, this is what it means, that your this is some kind of symmetric metric in higher dimensional space. This is the 4D part. Okay, you want the vacuum energy to do something with these parts, not with these parts. And the simplest exact solution which is known, if you do six-dimensional case, okay, non-zero tension brain, that's a co-dimension two object, then this is one, this is Minkowski, the whole thing is Minkowski, you just have deficit and conical deficit angle. That's the exact solution. So you, in a sense, you got what you wanted, which is that you had vacuum energy, and nevertheless, it didn't curve your four-dimensional space, okay? So what's left to get, of course, is that how do you get the rest of the galaxies and normal gravitational four-dimensional interactions on that? Because if you are just on this brain, so interactions will be six-dimensional, which are ruled out, okay? So now the goal is just in this type of framework to complement this with something which doesn't change this part, but also gets you, buys you four-dimensional interactions, okay? That's the goal. So the plan will be that I'll start with five-dimensional model. Now, that five-dimensional model, the change of gravity at large distances is not strong enough. Remember I told you about the Yukawa interaction? So here, you just go from 1 over r to 1 over r squared. So that's not strong enough to solve the cosmological constant problem. But as you go to higher codimensions, let's say in codimension 2, you change from 1 over r to 1 over r cubed. That becomes already enough in that simple language. Okay, so the reason why I want to discuss five-dimensional model again is because this is a toy model in which you can do some calculations at least and learn how to get four-dimensional gravity in infinite volume space, okay? So that's the only reason at the moment. So I'm going to make it even nicer, so let's see. I just did, right? This is, what I said. No, that's what I just said, which is that in five dimensions, I cannot solve that problem. That will be a solution of cosmological constant. That's why in five dimensions, I'll try to understand how gravity works without the tension. And so the same could apply in six and higher. But in six, I will put a tension. And all that does is create some deficit angle here. The four-dimensional part is flat. So that means that whatever exercise I do in 5D, if I get similar theory in 6D, it will be applicable. Yes. No, 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 so, sorry, again, so 5D, 5D bulb with zero tension, zero, it's Minkowski. Exactly. Yes. Right. Right. True. Sure, that is true. Yeah. So all,
so the headset is very different.
Yes.
The effect is very different.
Yes.
Why do you think that just young intention?
Yes. Because all I want to study is perturbations about flat background. Okay, now in 5D case, perturbations on flat background are achieved by tuning the tension because it doesn't solve the cosmological constant problem. In 6D case, flat background is achieved dynamically. In other words, in both cases, you study perturbations on flat background and you will see that they are similar. Well, I also have right to study 5D case. No, no, reasoning is that I want to study perturbations on flat background, period. So, right? Okay. That's right, yeah, precise, yeah, sure. No, 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 it's not a belief. I'm going to calculate it for you. It's not a belief. So I won't go into too much of details of VDVZ discontinuity. Also, there was one more author, which the referee told us that he did similar things, but I don't know, Iwasaki is the name, but this goes under VDVZ these days. So in any case, so the point is that irrespective of what theory and what Lagrangian we write down, just Lorentz group tells you that there are 5 degrees of freedom for massive spin two. And if that's the case, then the helicity zero couples to stress tensor, and that's Pransky type theory in which coupling is not conserved, that's ruled out by solar system measurements. So that's a problem. So these theories looks like address that problem in a non-trivial way. And I'm going to discuss this 5D case with zero tension, as you were pointing out. So perturbation flat background, and I'll show you that those perturbations are very similar to perturbations on 6D case in which you have a tension, because it's again Minkowski background. So that was the action Justin already mentioned. What's skipped here is the Gibbons-Hawking term, because that's just to get the right equations. And also I didn't put the particle physics. Particle physics is also in these dots. So there is a Z2 symmetry. This is like a boundary, I mean, because this has zero tension because of those reasons. This is like a boundary of space-time, and that's why we impose Z2 symmetry here in order to not deal with those small fluctuations of Goldstone-type modes. To make a contact with massive gravity, this is how the part of the equations look like. This is a conventional four-dimensional Einstein tensor, and this MC is the same as MG I had before. There is a slight difference because the order of magnitude is the same. And these are just extrinsic curvature terms, and that's the source that's sitting on the brain. So basically, this is your mass term in some sense, in some very rough sense. The anti are okay because this is a higher dimensional equation, and then you get also other equations which constrain the system and are important for solutions. Let me not go there. Now, as I said, this is not exactly massive graviton, because if you look at the propagator, its structure is p squared. There is no m squared, okay, which would be massive graviton. There is this square root, and Justin was discussing precisely that square root. So it's like a resonance mode because that pole is located on the second Riemann sheet. So it's exactly like a Z boson. So Z boson pole is here, for instance, because it has a width to decay. So this pole is somewhere there on the second Riemann sheet. So it doesn't violate unitarity or anything. It's completely consistent model. So just to orient myself, what time should I stop? One-way, okay, thank you. Okay, so now, there was a question about Poisson equation and how it would recover Newtonian physics, but the point is that if you take any localized source, okay, and do that exercise trying to write Poisson equation, of course you can solve for it, but what will happen is that at very, very high, large distance from the source, your nonlinear correction will be the same order as your leading correction. So you cannot really trust that result. This is what we did with Cedric, who is here, and Arkady Weinstein, and Gia Duali, based on Arkady Weinstein's very old work in massive gravity. Right. So value of this R star depends on the source. This is the gravitational radius of the source. If you have a sun source with a solar mass and nothing else in the universe, then that would be kiloparsec to calculate. Okay. Now, before you get to kiloparsec scale, there are other stars in our galaxy. Okay. So those other stars increase this RG, and this scale grows and grows and grows. So when you check in the universe, the object, in order to test this beyond R star physics, you have to have two objects, let's say two clusters of galaxies, which are separated from each other by distance bigger than R star. And as far as we searched, there is no substantial statistics on those kind of things too. Yeah. So as I said, you see, right. So at the edge of the galaxy, this is not kiloparsec. This is megaparsec. That means that all the globular clusters at the edge of the galaxy, they feel ordinary GR with tiny corrections. Yes. No, because the that's an important point. So let me explain. So if you have some small object here, which has R star, like small R star, so naively you would think that you go beyond this R star to see this modification. Okay. But if it happens that there is a huge nearby object, so that its R star encompasses this small object, then that huge object screens completely that effect. Other cluster of galaxies. Okay, fine. I can explain it in more detail. So the point is that the biggest object, actually these effects, as we tested, they go closer and closer to the horizon, if you look in the real data. Actually I have this picture here, sorry. So let me do very picturesque way. Here is a single object. Okay? So let's say there is nothing here to interfere with the logic. So this is the R star scale. Here, you don't recover GR. Okay. Here, your naive, G Newton expansion breaks down. So you have to do something else. One thing you can do is actually small graviton mass expansion, which actually works everywhere here, but breaks down precisely at this point. So you have two different expansions at two different places. So this small MG expansion recovers Einstein gravity with extraordinary accuracy, but there are tiny corrections which can be tested in lunar laser ranging experiments. Okay, well, they are tiny, but for astrophysical observables, you won't notice them. Exactly. Yeah. Precisely. So let me continue with this transparency. The point is that even if you go outside of the source here. The stress tensor is zero, right? So nevertheless, you have effective contribution to curvature. So there is non-zero, non-zero curvature here, which can translate into those forces that you were just mentioning. That is this. Okay, I would like to stop to spend more time on this because we've discussed this many times and some people already mentioned. And I'd like to discuss something else. So what I'd like this to discuss is two branches of solutions that you have on this in this model, and they correspond to choice of the different sign of the extrinsic curvature terms that I had in the four-dimensional Einstein equation. Remember, you have g mu nu plus mc times k, so you can choose different type of boundary conditions in the bulk, and depending what you choose, you have two, at least classically disjoint, branches of solutions. And that also manifests itself on any solution that you find. For instance, any source you put here, you have two branches of solutions. For Schwarzschild, on the conventional branch, you just have, you know, asymptotics of the five-dimensional Schwarzschild. While on the other branch, you would have Schwarzschild going into the four-dimensional De Sitter type on the slice, four-dimensional De Sitter type universe, and they are reflected in plus and minus here. So just to summarize that quickly, what's going on there? You should make a contact with a Schwarzschild De Sitter or Schwarzschild anti-De Sitter solutions. So for the plus sign would have been for Schwarzschild De Sitter, okay, and a minus sign would have been for Schwarzschild anti-De Sitter in the static patch, and this G is the function that's being introduced in this model, because there is no cosmological constant. I mean, it appears because of this modified gravity, and this G is such that before you hit any horizon, it changes the behavior. Okay, so you never hit at R star, this depends on R star, you change the behavior. So again, the point is that you get tiny modifications of the Einstein gravity at short distances, but at large distances, things change. And one curious observation that we found when we solved for Schwarzschild is that in the self-accelerated branch, that's a branch which gives you accelerated universe without the cosmological constant, okay? So this five-dimensional mass looked negative. So in other words, that was slightly strange, because although you put the positive mass here, so you go far away, and then at those far away scales, the mass was negative, and the reason why that was happening is because this extra term gives you kind of screening of the mass. So here you get some shell around that scale R star. You get a shell which is made of gravity. There is no matter or something. That shell is made of gravity. And that, depending on what branch you are, that renormalizes the mass. And on the self-accelerated branch, it renormalizes to make it negative. Okay. So that was slightly disturbing. However, because this solution at asymptotia would go to De Sitter, we didn't know what to conclude from that. Okay, so I'll come back to that point when I discuss other sources. And just to finish the stuff about measurability of that effect, you see, in any theory of massive gravity that you produce, in order to make it, in order for it to be consistent with observations, you have to have this type of strongly coupled behavior. There is no other way to reconcile things with the measurements in the solar system. Well, at least we weren't able to find any other way. And once you have that, there is a model-independent prediction that there should be additional precession of orbiting objects, okay? Because you get this term. Now, in conventional case, when you discuss a cosmological constant, for instance, to explain accelerated universe, you don't have this factor, so that's why this effect is tiny. You never measure that effect, okay? While here, it's enhanced by the ratio of the R star and R. And that's why you can measure that effect in principle. So that's the lunar ranging experiments that could measure that. So actually, you have on both branches you have this. It's reflected in this plus and minus. In one case it's advanced, in another case it's retardation. So okay. Now, so you may ask, to what extent the screening mechanism that I told you is universal? And actually, we found that it is universal, and unfortunately, also it is universal that on the self-accelerated branch you are getting something with a negative mass, and we convinced ourselves that by looking at the domain wall solution. In other words, this is other way of probing gravity. Okay, so we take domain walls and solve for it. What's the gravity of the domain wall? You know what it is in four-dimensional case. That this is a conventional Rilankin Ipsev-Sikivy metric. And what happens is that if you are in a coordinate system in which domain wall is not moving, it repels any massive object. Okay, and the reason why it repels it, it's got negative pressure in it, in the equation of state, of course. Now, in this theory, what happens is that precisely the same screening effect screens the tension within R star, and R star happens to be the core of the domain wall, so there is no effect whatsoever. So you have a domain wall sitting here, doesn't act any way on your massive object because its mass is screened. And let me not go to next transparency. You can show that on the self-accelerated branch, actually it overscreens, meaning that you get negative mass. You get negative five-dimensional mass, okay? So that's kind of already a serious indication that something must be wrong with the self-accelerated branch, because this is an exact solution. It's a solution everywhere, and it's a non-perturbative solution. Previously, the reason why these perturbative conclusions were unreliable, because you would get this ghost in perturbation theory exactly the same moment when the perturbation theory was breaking down on the self-accelerated branch, and that's what we showed with Cedric and Alberto Iglesias. However, there is no perturbation theory here. It's an exact statement. Now, what it decays to, how it decays, I don't think, I personally do not know. That's an interesting question. There was an interesting attempt on that by Koyama, Izumi, and Tanaka, and Pujolas, also on the paper. So we at the moment, we don't know what it decays to. In other words, it looks like they suggested that there is no branch changing transitions, but it could do something else. So that's an interesting question. I guess along the same lines, Rob will tell us more about kind of problems with or negative masses on that branch. Okay, so the bottom line here is that in 5D, we learned how to do perturbations on Minkowski, although I didn't show you the formula because I skipped it, which I promised you, right? So if you do perturbations, let's say one graviton exchange amplitude that Stefan was doing, so the amplitude would be 1 over p squared plus mc, square root of p squared, t mu nu, minus 1/3 of T. So these are the traces, right? So that's what you would get. This is exact calculation on flat background in 5D. Okay, now I'm going to show you next transparencies. Same calculation with tension on higher dimensional models. Okay, so, yes. Well, yeah, That corresponds to, you see, the bulk gravity scale is M star. That's just M star. So you want tension to be lower the quantum gravity scale, yeah. So we also found solutions for the other regime, which are different ones. They change topology, of course. But these are the ones in which you have an infinite volume extra dimension. Okay, so let's see what happens in higher dimensional models. And story here is this. You can generalize the same action to write in D dimensions. Clearly, physics is similar in six dimensions and higher to each other, but it's slightly different from five-dimensional case. And that reflects in powers of those boxes that Justin was talking about. But in terms of the nonlinear action, So let me parameterize here. Let me introduce two terms here. On the brain, there is four-dimensional term, and then there is d-dimensional term. Actually, there is a way to write this down, because four-dimensional metric here is the convolution of the five-dimensional metric with the profile of the brain. So you can write down that way. That was done in our paper with Hu, Vali, and Sefusati. And you can also have, which simply means that
the way you can think about this is that you have some kind of scalar field which interpolates from the brain out into the bulk, and that scalar field changes the coupling constant of three-dimensional gravity, while you still have that head. Okay? So now, the minimum, so these A and B are numbers. A and B are numbers. And original model that we discussed with Dira was B equals 0, because that was the simplest one. And then, in this paper, it was found that that model has a ghost. Okay, if you just ignore B, this has a ghost. Okay? So there is a subtle theory whether you can trust that calculation or not, because some curvatures blow up in the scale of MC, but I don't know answer to that question, and because of that, I'm not going to go into those debates. So I'm going to discard that part for the moment. Okay, so then we will reach a shift one to try to improve that and incorporate the depth term. And then the story is this, that I'm really in trouble. Story is this. A similar type of amplitude, okay, so now I incorporated the tension. This is in six dimensions. I have tension. And because I have B, the deficit angle that this object produces is tension divided by this B times M plank divided by the width of the brain, so it's small. Okay, because of that. B plays additional role in that.
So first of all, this B term, which is it related to what Justin was talking about,
yeah,
when you're introducing some readers and
there is a regularization.
Okay.
So wait, can think of this as follows. So it's not written that way. So you have B4x, dy here, this term, and let's say you have some scalar field, which has a profile, y-dependent profile, so that it's big here on the brain, but small outside. And then this is schematic way of just indicating that.
And you said that it's the product that B is related to the tension?
No, I didn't say that. See, what I said was that,
yes.
Okay, I have a transparency on that, so I'll hold it in detail anyway. So let me calculate the same type of exchange amplitude, okay? And it has this form. Now it's more complicated in 5D. So this is a conventional massive graviton pole. Conventional massive graviton pole, and this is a tensorial structure. Now it looks funny because these coefficients look funny, but actually the important point is that on the residue, if I take this expression on the residue, okay, this is k mu minus 1/3. Because on the residue, p squared equals to mc squared f, and in 6D is p. You get precisely 1/3 because you see, minus 1, you get twice p minus 1, and this is 3 times p minus 1, 2 times cancels p, you get 1/3. Okay, so although off shell, it's not like precisely like a massive graviton, but on shell, it is massive graviton with appropriate number of polarizations, and that's just a gauge independent statement. This is gauge independent object. Okay, now the point is this. So now we can look at the nonlinearities. So what are the nonlinearities? What determines the nonlinearities? These are the terms which we ignore, which are nullified in the one-particle exchange amplitude because they are multiplied by momentum. And they are determined by structures like this, which is similar to them, okay? So then you can study the spectrum of the theory. So if B is less than 1/3, you see that this pole is different from that pole, and this ends up being a ghost. Okay, so that's unacceptable, except that it is carrier that theory also break down the NMC, and I don't know what the consequence of that is. but in any case, so if B equals B bigger than 1/3, you won't get any strong coupling, you just get what we call softly massive gravity, because you have on shell, you have interpolation with 1/3, like massive graviton, and yet it's not strongly coupled. Okay, all those nonlinear effects that I was telling you before, they are gone. But of course, it's good and bad. It's good if you have other mechanisms for canceling this additional polarization. I don't know, by some repulsion or something, but I don't know that mechanism, right? So if somebody comes up with that type of mechanism, then these models will have modified gravity and consistent solar system predictions, and they'll be massive. And they'll be a candidate for solving the cosmos constant problem. Okay. Now, before that, we can go to B equals 1/3 case, which cancels this term. And again, as I told you, irrespective of B, this was 1/3 on shell. So this is a massive graviton. And it is strongly coupled with massive gravity. So maybe in Justin's regularization that he was discussing, maybe you can also see somehow. But here, what was important is also included the four dimension. I also kept the four dimensional induced term. Okay, that was the key. Without that term, maybe it's possible, maybe I don't know. Yeah. So in any case, so this is a special case in which you get, it looks like you get it all, except cosmic acceleration, which is the following. So you get large distance modified gravity, your tension does not cover your four-dimensional space, it covers the extra space. You have strongly interacting theory so that gravity becomes Einsteinian in short distances due to those similar effects, so you will have this predictions for perihelion advance. However, the numbers may be slightly different. Okay, except that you don't have self-acceleration here.
But in this, the B equal exactly 1/3, so the ghost also disappears?
Yes. The ghost, yeah, it's easy to see because ghost is precisely this pole, okay? This when this is equal to this, you see this pole, which is a massive gravity, resonance gravity, is different from this pole by this number.
Right, but then if you have the correction exactly zero, it's...
Yeah, it's just like a massive gravity.
Okay.
Yeah. You don't have it. But that pole is gone to infinity. So.
Right, but if it goes to negative infinity...
It doesn't matter where it goes, close to infinity. It's not there. There's no.
Okay.
You can write down a spectral representation. There is no state in the spectral representation corresponding to that. So.
And what did you say? The fact that on shell you get a third?
Yeah, I agree.
What does that mean? Because in these higher dimensions you do have at least one extra scalar in the shapes. And what does it mean that on shell somehow you get a third?
This is 6D.
Right.
Right.
But you expect the. You'd expect a massive graviton number of degrees of freedom plus one scalar for the extra dimension.
For what? I thought this is, if you look at the pole, this is just a massive gravity, right? If you look, the pole structure of this guy is just this. So you better recover. It's just one massive gravity. There is no pole besides. This is the closest one, corresponding to the first 2π rotation.
Mm-hmm.
So there is no other state but there, and that has 1/3. And so it has to have 1/3. But at large distance you get 1/4 of poles.
Mm-hmm.
If I go to large distances, yeah, maybe that's what you're asking. So if I go to P squared much smaller than M squared, so I should draw this term, right? So you have additional 1/2 from here, which gives you precisely 1/4, as you expect in 6D. So I think the following between the two is as you expect. So if there, it just on shell, it tells you that on shell this is like massive gravity. Okay, so actually this was the result question. So the background there was is this with alpha deficit angle. Now this alpha in this context is the reason why B was also important is because here it's got the term which is proportional to B, Planck mass, and the typical width of that object, which I had to introduce. This is the profile of the stellar field. So without B, this was T over M star 4. And then M star 4 is very small in order to get the right crossover scale. So that would mean that you wouldn't be able to introduce tensions bigger than 10 to the minus 3 B or so, right? Well, here, because in the core, basically, you make even 6-dimensional gravity weak, okay, in the core. This is exactly what matches to the solution outside. And now we can have tensions which are high. For instance, so suppose some UV physics created this brain. So then typical scale for this delta would be, I don't know, 1.1 or bigger, if not important. Whatever it is, let's say it's Planckian, brain with sub-Planckian, doesn't really matter for this argument. Then brain tension, you can make parametrically smaller than that by having, let's say, supersymmetry. Or you could have some other symmetry in high energy physics, so that it's much smaller than in quantum force. But if that's the case, then this ratio is tiny. So this alpha is much smaller than 1, so this is very close to Minkowski space, and that's why this argument is that's why it was a useful exercise to have five-dimensional calculation, because the calculation is flat space, even though here there is a tension. Okay? Okay, the summary of this part is that so if for generic values of B, the diagram, nonlinear diagrams do not really blow. And that's the nice theory of, and that's an existing proof of actually massive graviton. Because it's a full nonlinear theory. And it's there. However, you require an infinite number of fixed fields in a sense, right? Because this is high dimensional theory. And if you look from the four dimensional perspective, at each level you do have fixed mechanisms for spin 2 which eats up spin 1 and spin 0. So there is a fixed mechanism that you were mentioning previously. But you require infinite number of fields. And that is essential. So those infinite number of fields of course transpire into one resonance graviton. Resonance mode is just the sum of those fields. It has the mass and the width. But the presence of those were essential. So if you like to think about Weinberg's theorem, this is another way to think how about these constructions away Weinberg's theorem. And the tensorial structure was this. When MC goes to zero, if B is not the special value, it's smooth. So that's the softening mass of gravity. However, if B is 1/3, then you do get behavior similar to five-dimensional case. That will be strongly coupled, and you can be consistent with the observations.
At the level of your original action of R4 plus VR6, you understand why B equals a 30?
No, yeah, that's a great, very great question. Yeah, that's another question that needs to be understood. Maybe there is some symmetry here, and I was looking for some symmetry. I don't know the answer to the question at the moment. Must be some symmetry because it changes the degrees of freedom. Well, it changes from one to the other, so the short distance degrees of freedom. So. Okay, so I was going to say a couple of words about Lorentz violating massive gravity in 4D, but let me just summarize in 1 minute because there is no time to use my time. So in 4D, in four dimensions, if you don't do something special and just try to construct nonlinear completion of Fourier fields. This is Fourier field. This is ordinary GR, and that's the Fourier field Lagrangian. Now, h mu nu here is defined this way, and that's the definition. So it's full nonlinear. But the only caveat is, of course, that you have to put the background in. And here, the background is chosen to be flat. But otherwise, this is full nonlinear stuff. Okay. So this is a condition. The point is that this is not unique. You can have other conditions, which also will be nonlinear. But yet another point is that no matter what condition you do, it's inconsistent. Okay? So that's the status of this. Now, there are very nice attempts to do bigravity, so I guess Anselik will be talking about that, which is that in that case, this is also converted to a dynamical field, so that you have two gravities in a sense. Or you can think of them as this, one being gravity and another one being some kind of Google or something, right? Actually, that's how they were introduced by Salami, practically, I think. Okay? And then there's a very interesting dynamics which I'm certainly will be discussing in this. So because of this, we went to four-dimensional Lorentz violated constructions. And I'll just briefly summarize what the in 1 minute or 2 minutes what the status of that is. So the main problem of the four-dimensional mass of gravity was coming from the fact that Hamiltonian was not bounded below, because this additional mass term would screw up the constraints or the system of constraints when you have, I'm talking about the ordinary gauge constraints, right? So for GR. So GR in the Hamiltonian formula you can represent this as a Lux and shift multiplying by R0 and RG, which end up being a constraint, and it's a positive semi-definite. But once you introduced the mass term, that was gone at the nonlinear level. So instead of doing this, we propose the following. This is a student Luka Grisla, a student taken by you, who proposed a different approach to mass gravity, which is that instead of starting with Lagrangian objects.
Just to clarify, what was done was the closure of the constraint
object? Well, it wasn't about the closure. It was the fact that the Laplace field, you would get, let's say, n squared there. So Laplace does not give you constraint anymore. That equation determines the Laplace. Okay.
So there is then no constraints.
Yeah, you lose one constraint. You lose one constraint because of.
That's right.
Exactly. But not only that. Also, when you solve for the Laplace subfield back, Hamiltonian is not bounded below.
Well, there is not a Hamiltonian because there's no Hamiltonian constraint. And that Hamiltonian is not bounded from below.
Exactly.
That's the statement.
Exactly.
Okay, so that theory is done.
I think so.
Okay. Okay, just checking.
Yeah. So, in this framework, you can start with the Hamiltonian construction and take the guiding principle maintaining the system of constraints. In which case, you can introduce mass by modifying it in such a way that this still remains a Lagrange multiplier, which was a problem before. And you can analyze that kind of theory. So it has interesting properties that because we've broken Lorentz invariance here in a tricky way, it has long-range interactions. Okay, it has longer. There's gravitational wave is funny because you have massive wave with two polarizations. Okay, that's very unusual. You can have all that only in the Lorentz violated field. Because it has to be fine, right? So this is two polarizations. But besides that, there is an instantaneous long-range interaction which does not have carrier. Right? Typically with interactions we associate states which propagate. In that case, there is no state that propagates. It's like a 1+1-dimensional Schwinger model or 3+1-dimensional models with a 3-4 field. There is no carrier, but there is long-range interaction. So that's the type of theories you can get. And there is interesting dynamics. Unfortunately, I don't have time to discuss that. So let me just mention that that's another possible approach to mass gravity. Okay, so let me summarize. The conclusion is this, that the cosmological constant problem is a very severe problem. So it's a major mass problem, and in all the cases of the in all the cases where we have quantum field theories that have been established and parameters that have been measured, all those parameters are natural. So I don't see any reason why cosmological constant or the Higgs mass should be different in that respect and violate those arguments. So if so, then there is a very severe problem. Now, one possible way to solve that is to discuss the massive gravity, so this is in quote-unquote mark in a sense. They give rise to different couplings of the stuff that has very, very long wavelengths as compared to the stuff that has short wavelengths. And because of that, they kind of degravitate the cosmological constant, but does not modify too much the short wavelength stuff, the amplitude stuff. Now, there is no full and complete theory in which everything would be satisfactory. It looks like maybe if what I told you holds through numerous checks in higher coordinations, that could be one candidate in which you get class space, although you introduce the cosmological constant and you have four dimensional interactions consistent with general relativity. In that case, still, the question remains how you get self-acceleration, because that model does not have self-acceleration in itself. It just solves for it a big cosmological constant problem, but does not give rise to self-acceleration. Maybe models bigger in dimension 7 and higher can do that because we have some arguments for that. But in any case, that remains to be seen. Now, the five-dimensional model is a very good toy laboratory in which you can address these questions. So there are the two branches. There's a conventional branch in which you just, and I told you, you have impulse space if you don't introduce the cosmological constant. And you can probe the non-perturbative dynamics of gravity, which is very interesting. So it opened, it showed us different ways how four-dimensional world can be could be arranged in principle. So in observable distances, you have these corrections to planetary motions. And this is a model-independent statement. See, it does not really depend on those particular models. So this follows from the first principles. If you have massive gravity, given our knowledge today, which is that we don't have other mechanisms for canceling the vector polarization, then you have to have those predictions. Okay? Now, there is a self-accelerated branch found by Cedric, which is, and then with Cedric and Giga worked out to compare this with cosmology, which is a very interesting solution. In principle, that gives rise to a background which is accelerated just due to modified gravity. However, at the moment, because of this negative mass, objects that exist on the branch, it's not clear whether it's self-contained or not. This negative mass exact solutions indicate that there might be some instabilities, but I don't know how fast those instabilities are. So you see, in ordinary field theories, if we discuss four-dimensional ordinary field theories and we find a ghost, we just abandon the field theory, because that ghost we can start producing from vacuum, and that destabilizes the vacuum completely, okay? So now, in this case, it's slightly different, because you find a ghost, but it you find it only when you are in a strong coupling regime. So it's not clear how to do the calculation to estimate the decay rate, etc. And yet, you know that in non-perturbative physics, some remnant of this ghost remains because you get all these negative mass solutions suggesting that there might be some instabilities. So I guess we should still want to understand what those imply in order to maybe better models to have that knowledge and address similar questions.
Models can't address the
Y and alpha. No, yeah, that's absolutely fair to say. Because there is an input parameter, which is an MG. Yeah.
Eric?
What does the graviton decay into?
Well, it decays into this Kaluza-Klein model. So I took completely four-dimensional perspective in which this was a massive state with decay width. but this is just a superposition of infinite number of counterclaim states. And because of its infinite number, it starts from zero, there is no mass gap in that spectrum. So it can decay into arbitrary light counterclaim modes. Or, which is the same to say, it can decay to higher dimensional gravity.
Okay. Yeah, well, you started with saying that the standard model, the sort of natural, physically natural,
yes,
except the Higgs mass.
Yes.
Now, is this Russell mass protected?
Or yes, the Russell mass is protected even in the Pauli fields theory. So let's take Pauli fields, which is simple stuff. Because if you take, so the easy way to understand why it's protected is if you take the limit and gravity goes to zero, you have enhanced symmetry, which is general theory. Because of that, any new correction that you calculate is proportional to the graviton mass itself. Okay? That's why it's protected. This is very similar to why m square phi square pair in that equation is protected. Because if you take m goes to zero, you have shift symmetry in the Lagrangian. Yeah? So that's why it's protected. So it's a similar kind of argument.
So I understand,
if
you have a direct straight analysis, massive
gravity of 4 feet. Yes. Energy is sometimes below 4 feet. Yes. So you have to go to higher dimensions
to solve your problem.
Yes.
So you're forced into higher dimensions to
that reason. Yeah, in that particular context,
I'm not.
I don't want to.
Well, what do you mean, it's a context?
Well, maybe.
Hamilton is
a gravity. I'm still. No, it's that particular theory. So I'm not giving a hope that there is a four dimensional massive gravity. Right, consistent theories. So I don't want to say that. So maybe we don't know how to formulate. Well, that's a fundamental question, right? We have a consistent theory for massive abelian fields, consistent theory for massive non-abelian gauge fields, and why we're not able to have consistent theory of massive tensor fields in 4D. That's not clear to me. There is no one. I don't think there is a local theory.
Well, the point is not saying.
Sure. There are all kinds of general arguments, but I cannot prove that such a theory does not exist. That particular realization is safe.
Okay, I think everyone is hungry, so let's thank you. Mm-hmm.